I was first introduced to Vitalik as the founder of Ethereum, and over the course of a few years, I've gotten to know that there is so much more to him. Welcome to the B-sides of my conversation with Vitalik. The outtakes, the behind the scenes, the weirder stuff, where we get to know Vitalik even more. We talk about longevity, the value proposition of the moon versus Mars, how San Francisco should be just as big as Hong Kong, and why dark chocolate is better than white chocolate. I'm Morgan Beller, and this is the NFX Podcast. I know that longevity is one of your growing interests. So for those of us who want to learn more, wish we knew more, or if you were having dinner with your friend's parents and you wanted to leave them with one thing about longevity and anti-aging that they probably don't know about, what's that one thing?
So I still recommend Aubrey de Grey's book, Ending Aging. It was written in, I think, 2007. And that was the book that kind of originally indoctrinated me into life extensionism. When I talked to Aubrey more recently, like he still recommended that book to me, I think even as recently as like 2 or 3 years ago. And he basically said that, you know, yes, these still basically are the 7 categories of aging that are like by far the most significant. So that's a good primer if you want to kind of somewhat understand the basic concepts. And then I'm sure you can just like follow the organizations and follow their websites and kind of some of the more recent articles that they're pushing out. There's also a subreddit, reddit.com/r/longevity. So that's one that I follow and go to from time to time.
Is there any longevity challenge trial that has recently been published or that you've read about that you wish you could participate in?
I think right now things are still like 5 years too early to be doing really serious stuff. There's a list of things that that longevity people think have small effects, and people are kind of debating back and forth and having studies back and forth about. Ashwagandha is one of those examples. Metformin is one example, and then there's this kind of longer list that goes on. What else was there? There were some interesting recent results around kind of parabiosis. So this was this idea that kind of got reported on a few times because it just plays so perfectly into the kind of evil Silicon Valley like vampire stereotypes. The idea a few years ago was basically that if you had take an older person, or this works with animals too, and you basically just kind of connect their bloodstream to the younger person, then the older person would be kind of, you know, quote, rejuvenated with the kind of younger person's blood to some extent. There were some sub-experiments on this. There were some like kind of results, and it was somewhat inconclusive. But of course, you know, it really captured the imagination, just like, you know, because of the bloody optics of the thing. But then there was this interesting study from a year ago that I think, or somewhere close to a year ago, that kind of really changed the narrative on this. Basically, it turns out that you don't need young blood for this. Like, it turns out that if you just replace part of a person's blood with, I think it was water and with saline and albumin and basically just like water with a couple of other dumb things, then you can have basically all the same positive effects, right? So it turns out that the gains from that procedure don't come from like younger people having good ingredients. They come from older people having damaged ingredients. And if you can flush those damaged ingredients out, then you can potentially reduce the level of damage in a person's body. So that was interesting. Like, once again, this is the sort of thing that's still significantly too early to be like really doing, but it's the sort of thing that, you know, is definitely worth kind of doing more research and looking into more. But you know, there are communities that are starting to do more research and to look into this sort of stuff more. And then at the same time, there's also more radical therapies. Like, there's people trying to come up with the drugs that target very explicit categories of damage, trying to deal with senescent cells, which are basically just essentially cells that turn into zombies and start screwing around and doing bad stuff in your body. There's drugs that go after just like various kinds of kind of protein related damage. And so far, it's still kind of in early stages, but it's kind of all slowly progressing. So there's a lot of interesting things happening. And I definitely encourage people to kind of look into it and follow along the space.
There's definitely a fine line between waiting has a cost and too early, especially when it has to do with things you're putting inside human bodies. So we'll see if anyone cracks the code there. Longevity, we could talk about that for hours. The fact that you're not worried about it and the second order social and cultural effects is encouraging. There has to be something that worries you about longevity. What is the risk, if anything, socially, culturally, biologically, economically?
I think the things that worry me are probably around like human enhancements in ways other than longevity. Like just some people being much stronger and much smarter than others is definitely one risk. And just like making sure that the enhancements that we end up creating actually are kind of available to everyone. But then even if available to everyone, and like different people may well end up choosing different enhancements. And so we may end up having kind of more differences between each other a century from now than we do today. And you know, that could be a source of, could also be a source of like really interesting new ways for us to complement each other. So that definitely worries me a bit more than longevity itself does. So one thing I'm not worried about is there's no such thing as a gene for obedience to the Communist Party. Now, there might be genes that correlate with obedience in general, but if you give someone that gene, then there's no way to be sure that they're going to be more obedient to you instead of being more obedient to the first cult that reaches out to them on the internet, whose goal may well be to overthrow you.
What is illegal, either should be legal and or will become legal just because laws of physics, it's silly, over the next, let's say, 5 to 20 years?
One big category that I think we already talked about is just that participating in experiments at some earlier stages of a product's life cycle, whether that is whether that's medical or whether that's drones or whether that's like self-driving cars or whatever else. I definitely hope to see kind of more movement in the trend of like people who wants to try things early, having ways to try things early. And I definitely expect, as I mentioned, kind of COVID to give a nice push in that direction. What other things? Here's a fun one. It looks like it's becoming more and more legal to build like actually reasonable amounts of housing in California, and it looks like the YIMBY movements are finally making some progress. And I saw whether there's like parking minimums got struck down in a lot of places, and there's more and more movements toward upzonings. Really, San Francisco should be as big as Hong Kong, right? Like San Francisco should have a population of 7 million people, and it should have the skyscrapers and all of that. But like instead, it's like barely 1 million. And you know, it does feel like the San Francisco and California politics essentially kind of suicided to some extent by just giving in to existing residents' demands, but just not building anything else. And it feels like, you know, the political winds behind those original kind of pressures are finally crumbling, at least to some extent. And that's something I'm happy with. I mean, it'll lead to lower rents for people. It'll lead to more people being able to live where they want to live.
Do you think San Francisco is dead?
I definitely think that San Francisco is never again going to be considered a necessary place for anyone to be the way that it was up until around 2015 or so. I expect it to continue to have a strong tech community with a lot of people there, but like I would not be surprised to if 30 years from now, San Francisco is widely viewed as a kind of establishment boomer town. Like basically, well, I guess the millennials would be the new boomers by then, but you know what I mean, right? Like, yeah, just like, you know, you have your Apple and your Facebook and all of these kind of old world companies that just have to be based there because they have too many capital investments, and all the cool stuff is happening in the next Silicon Valley, which is, well, the set of interesting and innovative small countries is, I think, one kind of very powerful candidate for that. And then just generally, it'll be much more distributed.
One of my favorite moments of last year, pre-pandemic, was we were in Israel together. And I feel very lucky that we not only had the opportunity to visit Palestine last year, but we had the opportunity to visit Palestine together. And for me, this was a really eye-opening experience, having visited Israel several times, but never crossing the border. So for you, I know you work with a lot of Israelis, you had been to Israel before, you had never been to Palestine before either. How did visiting the other side of the wall change your views on Israel at all, if at all?
I don't know, like that definitely seems like a very far from optimal situation on so many levels, right? Like it's just like even you know, if you just notice the facts that like falafels cost 15 shekels on the Israeli side of the border and 5 to 10 shekels on the other side of the border, like, you know, you just know which side of that whole situation is a better place to be at the moment, and to just like which side has kind of just like more unfairness stacked against it. Also, the way that the wall says exit when you go from Israel into Palestine, but like doesn't say exit when you go from Palestine into Israel, like that was I found that strange, and maybe symbolic of something. So many signs that there's like something strange and wrong, and like you know which direction the wrongness is going.
So let's do some rapid fire questions, some this or that questions to end on something quick and fun and see where this goes. Deep ocean or space?
Space. Though Antarctica is also underrated.
White or dark chocolate?
Dark chocolate. I usually prefer 90%. So lately I've been getting more comfortable with some of the
Robin Hood. So Vitalik tracks every percentage of dark chocolate that he has ever tried.
Yeah. So I have this long-term dream of eventually trying every integer from 80 to 100. And so far I've had, let's see if I remember, I've had 80, 83, I think 85, 86, 88, 90, 92, 95, 99, and 100. I believe those are the ones that I've tried. So it's still about 10 integers that I need to go through at some point.
We have to find those. We have to find those other ones, and we'll find a way to send them to you. This one I know you've got. Blue Origin or SpaceX?
SpaceX has been doing amazing work. Blue Origin, I think, like the problem is they haven't really released as much, so it's just harder to judge them so far. But I hope they do great things, and maybe with Bezos finally getting out of Amazon, he might end up focusing on space and doing some great things there. But we'll see.
Mars or the Moon?
I feel like Mars and the Moon have somewhat different value propositions. Like the Moon is interesting because, like, first of all, it's pretty close to the Earth. So if you have a conversation with someone on the Moon, like the round trip latency, as we've established, is only about 2.3 seconds. So it's not going to be worse than this conversation. Mars, on the other hand, like, you know, it's somewhere between like something like 5 to 15 minutes away. I forget the exact number. With Mars, you have a much more asynchronous experience interacting with humanity's mainland. So that's one difference. And I think like it definitely makes the Moon more convenient. The other interesting thing about the Moon is like the low gravity is interesting. I was just like really looking forward to running a marathon in 1/6 gravity. Like I just want to feel what it's like, you know? Whereas Mars like goes up to something like 40% of the Earth or whatever, so it's like interesting too, but less extreme. Mars, the fact that it's further away is also a interesting value proposition. Like, you know, Mars, like the sci-fi trope of Mars declaring independence is much more realistic than the moon declaring independence. Well, okay, I guess there was one Robert Heinlein novel about that, but you know, there's just way more sci-fi novels about Mars becoming its own thing. So by sci-fi narrative evidence, like that's just more likely. In terms of like what you can do in both places, I don't know. Like it ends up depending on like just what people want out of space travel. You know, do they just want a different experience? Do they want to be in a place like kind of disconnected from earthly concerns? Do they have some kind of industrial mining need? Is it something else entirely? I don't know. Yeah, we'll see.
This isn't a this or that question, but since clearly I have space on my mind and a lot of my questions are space related, what's something that you think will happen in space that seems so sci-fi today? So like, I personally believe a lot of the next trillion-dollar industries will happen on space, space farming, space manufacturing, space drug development. You could think I'm crazy, which is fine. Or you can agree with me and say something that you think will be outsourced to space at some point in the next, let's say, 100 years, that seems crazy today.
The one really boring example is using space as a method for points of travel from Earth to Earth. I mean, they're going to go up and just be like much faster than an airplane can be. Like the energy expenditures are pretty comparable and so forth. So, no, that'll be interesting. Like, I'm definitely excited about, you know, San Francisco to Singapore in 55 minutes or whatever the number ends up being. Aside from that, I definitely want space to be kind of a combination of, you know, mainly a tourist thing for together with some industries happening and just stuff being built in zero gravity. I'm not sure exactly what kinds of things it makes sense to be built in zero gravity. I'm just like not that much of an expert on those topics. That could be interesting things.
San Francisco or Miami or Austin, because those are the places where people seem to be being sucked out of here too.
There's also the quieter options, like Denver is one, and the Ethereum Foundation has been quietly setting up a base that has more and more people in Denver. Denver's kind of cool, and I met the governor, Jared Polis. He was willing to read a crypto-themed children's book with me on stage, which I thought was really nice and amazing. And I follow him on Twitter. He just seems like a lovely, pragmatic chap. That's and then the Colorado is right beside Wyoming, and Wyoming has all of that crypto-friendly regulation. So I think like that's definitely one of that's like the pool that, you know, neither the old guard nor the self-styled leaders of the new guard talk about that much. But it was lovely. The aspect of being 1,600 meters above ground is interesting. I need to like properly try doing a run there. We'll see how that goes. And then what else? Miami, I've been to Miami a few times. It seems interesting, though I don't understand it well enough. So I definitely want to try to understand Miami more. The other interesting thing about Miami is that Miami is like a de facto gateway to Central America, right? Like all the flights going from random US and Canadian cities to like far, you know, Central and South America places, unless they're direct, they tend to be the hub. And, you know, you have a lot of Cuban immigrants going to Florida, a lot of other Latin Americans in Florida. So I definitely think that like Latin America as a region is a region that the U.S. is going to start kind of learning to care more about. I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, it may just like take China trying to like put up a couple of Belt and Road projects or whatever, or whatever they call them in a couple of South American countries, and then U.S. people will kind of get scared and realize that they need to compete somehow, or it could just happen on its own. I don't know. But you know, generally, like, it feels like Latin America does feel like one of these kind of slightly forgotten places that probably the US might need to do more interfacing with. And I say this as someone who has done far less kind of Latin American than I wanted to. Like, unfortunately, South America in particular is still the one continent I've never been to yet, though that's going to change with the next DEF CON in Colombia when it happens. So this is another one of those kind of we'll see kind of situations. But like, basically, if U.S. Latin America relations go well, then Miami will be very well poised to benefit from that.
I agree. We should all start learning Spanish. How many languages do you speak?
This is complicated because it depends how I need to speak them. Like, we're speaking English. I can speak Russian well. I can speak Chinese reasonably well. French and German, I can kind of understand decently, but I don't really have enough practice speaking either of them. Spanish, I kind of know a little bit of, and I can, you know, kind of make my way through some blog articles, but I definitely want to really improve it. Aside from that, not too much. I did study Latin and ancient Greek in high school, but I regrettably do not remember too much of either.
That's something else I'll also never forget, is being in Bethlehem with you, and we're all, you know, taking selfies and you're translating the Latin on the side of the church.
It was like my one opportunity to read Latin in like 5 years.
Vitalik, you make me laugh, you make me smile, you expand my brain. Thank you. This has been so fun.
Thank you, Morgan. This has been fun.
You've been listening to the NFX podcast. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you can subscribe to the NFX podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. For more information on building iconic technology companies, visit nfx.com.